Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen, and I'm being joined in studio right now, first by Horst Schmidt, who is here live with me, and on the phone, Reverend Ann Schranz, as we discuss the Unitarian Universalist Church, and we're going to get an overview of what the church is, and also, and we're kind of doing this as a preview, as we're going to be welcoming Reverend Ann to the area on March 4th, but as I said, she's on the line right now. Reverend Ann, thank you for joining me.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
And Horst as well. So I appreciate you coming back in and setting this up.
Well, I appreciate you guys taking the time to allow us to talk about this.
Now, Reverend Ann, I'm going to go ahead and just start with you and go and give the basic question. I can't think of any better place to start than, what can you tell me about the Unitarian Universalist Church? If you met me on the street and I said, hey, what's that? How would you answer?
Well, Unitarianism and Universalism began as distinct branches of liberal Christianity, and they consolidated around the 1960s. Unitarian Universalism is not considered within Christianity today because we draw from a collection of six sources of wisdom, and that collection is quite broad, and that is what makes us distinct.
Now, there are still, you still meet as in a church or in a location. I know that I've been to, as a guest, to the KUF, the Keweenaw Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, that meets here in Houghton. Horst, I saw you there with one of the, I think it probably was the first time I actually met you face to face. I was there for a news event at the time. So, coming into this, I have a little bit of firsthand experience of, kind of what goes on. Much different than, I guess maybe what I'm used to. I was actually briefly a Baptist pastor at one point back in my background. This is kind of an interesting conversation for me. And it's just setting kind of a ground rule, since we don't normally talk about religion on this program. We do talk about organizations in the area, events coming up and sort of like that. Just for any of my listeners that are out here, I'm not here to challenge or argue any kind of theology. That's not the point of the show. I want to welcome Reverend Ann and Horst as well, and let them, give their ideas. And as a listener, you're free to have your own questions, and hopefully you'll check things out on your own. So sound good, everybody?
Yes.
All right.
That sounds good. I thought it might be helpful if I actually outline briefly just the six sources of wisdom, because that gives the framework for Unitarian Universalism.
Please do.
Our first source is direct experience of mystery and wonder. Shorthand might be calling it mysticism. The second source is the example of social justice activists, whether or not they considered themselves religious. Our third source of wisdom is wisdom from the world's religions as a group. Our fourth source highlights Jewish and Christian teachings in particular, because the tradition emerged out of liberal Christianity and Christianity emerged out of Judaism. Our fifth source is humanist teachings. And our sixth source is spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions. And that I typically understand as being from indigenous peoples and also from neo-pagans. And so it's this collection of six very diverse sources that makes Unitarian Universalism a unique tradition today.
All right. Well, let's go to the heart of it. What's the view of God in a Unitarian Universalist church?
Unitarian Universalists do not have a common creed, so there is no set belief about God, God's existence, the nature of God. In fact, there is diversity in our congregations. Some of our members believe in God. Some of our members do not believe in God. Of the ones who believe in God, they may have similar views or different views. So because there's no theological or philosophical unity in belief, it matters even more than usual how we treat each other and how we interact with the wider world.
Many Christian churches, when they gather for Sunday morning, they're gathering there to worship, and they're there to worship God and worship Christ. And how does that differ then when the Universalists gather?
I understand worship to be shaping what is worthwhile. And so it is not necessarily God-focused. It is not necessarily focused on Jesus. We will often include some readings or meditation words to center ourselves on a Sunday morning worship service, but the grounding may not necessarily come from the Christian Bible.
And on the Christian Bible, your views on, or your organization's views on its origin and significance.
Well, since we don't have a creed, there's no single point of view on that. We do honor Jewish and Christian teachings as one of our sources of wisdom. So we respect Jesus as a teacher, and some Unitarian Universalists also consider themselves Christian. I would say maybe a minority in general, but it's certainly some. I think the central role of authority, religious authority, is something that Unitarians and Universalists and Unitarian Universalists have grappled with over many, many years. I think the authority that we accept tends to be what we call from the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And by free, we mean that we can look for wisdom anywhere. By responsible, we mean we process it in community. We consider it in community. We don't imagine that we can perhaps sit on a mountainside or in a cave and come to wisdom all by ourselves, that there is a real social dimension to our take on religious tradition. And that's partly because there are social inequities, there are social structures that that oppress some people, and so religion we understand to have a social dimension as well as a personal dimension.
Well, I appreciate you, I guess, tolerating my questions as I was, like I said, trying to ask if you were meet somebody on the street and they wanted to know some basic questions. I think that those were some that would probably be asked and that probably you have been asked on numerous occasions. But I want to kind of switch gears a little bit now because, having a background in the church, you can't help but notice attendance dwindling in traditional churches and in Christian churches. And when I did attend the Unitarian Universalist service, I was actually quite surprised at how many people that I knew that were there from many walks of life, from our universities and our community leaders. And saw a lot of people taking part in this. And I can definitely see the appeal is people begin to struggle with their, faith-based religions and then looking for something else in some of the struggling times that we're having and trying to find answers anywhere, and many of them finding them here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that may be true, and I think attendance in many forms of organized religion is declining across the board, and I think part of that relates to the number of choices people have regarding how we spend our time. We, perhaps compared to 200, 300, 500 years ago or 1,000 years ago, the churches or religious organizations are not necessarily the focal point of setting a community's values or socializing or mutual aid and support or education or entertainment. So I think the competition for people's time has gotten more intense, and that just means that it's more difficult than perhaps ever before to nurture a commitment to a given religious tradition.
Relevancy is something that all religions struggle with in this day and time, especially with both our political climate, some of the violence, some of the things that are going on in our social realms. With the progressive views of the Unitarian Universalists, do you find yourselves, I guess, more at the heart of things that are going on currently and today?
Good question. I don't know that that Unitarian Universalists would necessarily be more at the heart of what's going on today. I think that it's impossible for any person in this country to avoid the news, good news and bad news, and to avoid some of the turmoil and the fallout from the last election, I'll say, in particular. And so it's impossible to avoid. I think that you know, perhaps everyone who ever lived thought, well, I'm living in the toughest times ever. And it's possible to think that about today with the threats that we face as a nation and the lack of civility that we sometimes encounter in talking with each other. I think for me personally, it's important to take the long view of things and to not become discouraged by what happened today, this week, this year, last year, but rather to look for courage and hope to the social justice activists and the religiously mature people who have lived in the past, and to realize that we have a legacy that we can develop and carry on.
Well, no matter what time we go or how far we go back, yes, people even who were writing the scriptures themselves thought they were living in the worst of times.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much universal there. What about on those, some of those social issues, since, you know, it would be fair to describe the religion as being a liberal religion, correct?
Yes, we're certainly religiously liberal, and many of our members are also politically liberal.
Okay, so what issues are important to the church to its members?
I think anti-racism has risen to the forefront in recent years, and I think that gun violence is certainly up there, and issues related to immigration, I would say, are also among the top three. I served congregations in California for 11 years before retiring to Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin, about 6 months ago. And so immigration was certainly something near and dear to my heart. And I think that under economic justice and issues of economic justice and injustice are a common thread that weave through almost all the rest of the issues as well. And I would say women's issues are also important. So I guess I'm up to about five. I would say those are the top five. But I would be very interested to hear what Horst would have to say also.
I'm talking right now with Reverend Ann Schranz here on the line, who is a minister for Unitarian Universalism. She'll be actually in our area on March 4th, and she'll be visiting the Keweenaw Unitarian Universal Fellowship. And joining me from there is Horst Schmidt, who's live with me in studio. So, you know, hearing Reverend Ann talk, Horst, is she giving me a pretty good explanation on the belief system and organization of the church?
Yes, she does. I mean, we do have a wide variety of beliefs in terms of Christian and non-Christian, and what you observed in terms of meeting people that you knew and you didn't realize they were Unitarian Universalists. This is part of our, part of our liberalism. In that we believe we should be involved in community, and we don't necessarily wear a badge saying we're UU when we go somewhere. We're just involved, and then we come together and we realize that we have this commonality.
Now, I'm sure both yourself and Reverend Ann would say that, you know, you're very open to, you know, all different viewpoints and interpretations of religion, that, you know, you wouldn't want to exclude anybody in the church. But yet the positions of the church are decidedly on the liberal side. So does that, in a sense, then exclude, you know, somebody who's conservative, or by its very nature, people who have different theologies, some from whether they're Baptist or Catholic or anyone that would look at, you know, your religion and say, well, that's too open.
Well, I think what we need to differentiate here is that many of us who are in KUUF are from different denominations, and we've expressed the dissatisfaction with the viewpoints in those denominations. However, you also have people who believe in those denominations and the creed and theology, and basically, if you're choosing a religion, it's your choice as to where to go. Do you stay and stick with what you are comfortable with? If you're uncomfortable, there's a chance you may move to another denomination, and I think that's what you're seeing with us in terms of having so many people who are actually you use. There are people who have been multi-generational or who are multi-generational you use, but I think they're probably in a minority in our congregation.
Okay. Yeah, I was kind of wondering because with Reverend Ann, I stopped at three. I didn't know how far you were going, Reverend Ann. But you mentioned the racism, gun violence, and immigration. We talk about three prevalent topics in certainly in our news cycles today. If somebody was coming into the church and then they were for Second Amendment rights and for building a wall, would they find themselves completely at odds and unable to really kind of function in the church?
Probably so. I mean, my experience with Unitarian Universalist congregations going back over 25 years includes, I think, two in Florida as a layperson, two in California as a layperson, two in California as a professional member of the clergy. So let's say half a dozen UU congregations over 25 years. I would say that the view you expressed is probably the case. However, the only little asterisk I would put is that I think there are some Unitarian Universalists, including some UU clergy members, who identify as gun owners and responsible gun owners. And so the matter of the Second Amendment is just a little bit more nuanced than what one might expect.
Okay. And again, as I'm just trying to ask questions that people in the listening audience may want to know and try to understand, what does it take to be a member of the church? For many churches, you go through a screening process and a board may meet, and you're certainly welcome to come into the building and participate in worship services. But when it comes to actually being a member, you have to have some knowledge of the creed, and you get to get accepted and express whether it's through baptism or through some other public display of faith. Is there anything similar to that in the Unitarian Universalism?
Each congregation decides its own criteria for membership. So in this case, I would invite Horst to speak.
Well, in our case, if you wish to join, you sign sign in our book and with a board member present, and that is our initiation, so to speak.
So it doesn't get much more complicated than that, huh?
No, it isn't. I mean, if you feel comfortable being among us, then you decide to join. We don't want to put you through a whole bunch of different things, initiation rites or studies and that. We assume you're an adult enough to be able to do that on your own.
And I would just interject that I think it's prevalent for congregations to have some kind of new member orientation classes or opportunities for new members to ask questions and receive answers. I've seen them be as few as two and as many as six sessions, and my experience of welcoming new members in different congregations is that some have been regular attenders for 6 months and some for 2 years, and in one case, in the last congregation I served, an individual had been attending and participating regularly for 10 years, and then he finally decided this was the time to actually formally join. So there are different ways to go.
Reverend Ann, do you experience people who do not share the views of the Unitarian Universalism coming to you and expressing, their displeasure with the teachings of the church or the open-mindedness of the church? And how do you handle that?
My default response is to consider it a pastoral care situation. If someone is really upset about something, what matters is the fact that the person is upset. And my response is to listen to the feelings beneath the words, to draw out what may be behind the person's emotions and beliefs and feelings, to learn a little bit about the person's history, because most people have opinions that are based on some kind of perception about something that happened or something they read. And so where is this coming from? That would be my initial approach.
Okay.
I think that one of the things I've learned after, I guess, 4 years of preparation for ministry and 11 years in ministry, so say 15 years as a preparing for or working as a Unitarian Universalist clergy person, is that under stress, people regress. And so I think the fact that there is so much stress in the world today has an impact on how people are responding and how they're, and what their needs are in this moment of time. I think that in another setting, if it were some kind of public panel discussion or something that where a pastoral response was not really indicated, then I would probably just emphasize that we all have the right and the privilege and the responsibility to agree to disagree. I think especially in this overheated social media environment, it's a pipe dream to think that we're going to convince anyone else to change their mind. I think that agreeing to disagree may be the most mature way to handle differences.
You know, you and I could probably have a very interesting in-depth discussion on, you know, different theological topics, whether it's the, you know, the human condition, the origin of sin, the prayer, miracles, all those things. But, you know, I'm going to save those for, you know, off air, because, you know, just so many different people would have their own viewpoints on that. And that's what I want to use our time. But I do want to ask, you mentioned about the clergy. And what does it take to become a clergy person in the Unitarian Universalist Church?
In most cases, it takes about 3 years of study in a seminary, plus about a three-month position as a student chaplain, typically in a hospital or hospice setting, and then about a nine-month internship under the supervision of a seasoned Unitarian Universalist minister. So for most of us, it takes about 4 years of time, and most of us come out of seminary with anywhere from, I would say, $40,000 to $75,000 of student loan debt, so that clergy members are not immune from some of the pressures around student debt load that many students in this country are facing. Of all those aspects, that's challenging enough, but there is a parallel professional credentialing process that's overlaid on top of all that internship, studies, chaplaincy work. And that professional credentialing process consists of filing paperwork, being seen by committees, kind of presenting oneself in a high-stakes setting and hopefully conveying that one is indeed a Unitarian Universalist minister. So it's really difficult. And I think the professional credentialing process is even more rigorous than the academic process.
All right. Horace, I wanted to ask you, since Reverend Ann is coming in here, she'll be here March 4th, if people want to check out the church, if they want to see Reverend Ann in person, I'm assuming she's going to be speaking here. What are the details with that?
Well, she's going to be here at speak at 10:30 service, and we are officially on 700 Park Avenue, but you park in the lot off of Waterworks Road at the BHK campus. And what I wanted to mention is the reason I came today to have Reverend Ann speak to us is because we're having a series of visiting ministers, and I thought that by letting your audience know that there's an opportunity to get a variety of views as we go through this process of having at least one minister a month. And if you want to know when the minister comes, go to KUUF.net. And we'll have our calendar, and you can see who's coming when.
I certainly invite people to do that as well. I ask what questions I could think of in the short time that we have here with Reverend Ann. We're looking forward to having you come in and giving people a chance to ask those questions to you personally, Reverend Ann.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity to talk with you and to talk with your listeners.
All right. You're welcome. And thank you, Horace, as well. Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.